The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 107 for Wednesday, April 16th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to talk about the geeky stuff we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight is none other than my friend, Mr. Ryan Murphy of The Gamers Inn and Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be back. Talk some Game of Thrones, some meaty HBO television.
Absolutely. Big episode this week. I'm just going to warn everybody right now. Normally I wait until later on in the show to talk about spoilers, but I'm going to just throw it out there. If you haven't been spoiled by Game of Thrones, we are going to spoil it for you. So please watch the episode before you continue. Episode 2, season 4, and that's what we're talking about. We don't spoil the books. We just spoil the television show. But we have some spoiler issues to talk about, I think, this week, because one of the things that I try to avoid via Twitter and stuff like that is Sunday nights. Game of Thrones is on. Previous to Game of Thrones, it's a big Walking Dead night, and there's a lot of people that live tweet the shows. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. That's fine. That's all good. I know to stay away during the times that those shows are on air, because I think that's an engaging experience for people that have cable, that have HBO, that have AMC, and want to watch those shows live. But I found so many friends, including myself, this week, got spoiled on Game of Thrones the day after, like on the Monday.
Really?
Yeah, and like my sister got spoiled from like one of her friends on Facebook. And I got spoiled by someone I follow on Twitter who normally doesn't talk about Game of Thrones stuff. I won't get into names just because I don't want to get too into it, but I was pissed. Like, I'm having my coffee at 7:30 a.m. Monday. The show has not been out for 12 hours. You know, people that have even DVR'd it and haven't, you know, got home from work on Monday to watch it are getting spoiled by the stuff that they're putting out there on Twitter and Facebook. And I have a real beef with it. It really ticks me off. Did you ever get spoiled on the Walking Dead? Because you guys do the same thing with Zombies Ate My Podcast that we do with Game of Thrones. You guys do like an episode by episode, kind of blow by blow on that show, right?
Yeah, I have never been spoiled on Walking Dead. I'm usually, I don't know whether it's just I'm not following people on Twitter who are likely to do that. And I, you know, I occasionally will see like someone tweet about Walking Dead. It's like, oh shit, that happened. Whoa. And I'm like, okay, that could mean anything. And it's Walking Dead. That literally could mean anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, with Game of Thrones, I mean, I know why it sort of sparked up again with this episode, the obvious reason being the conclusion, and I didn't know anything about this season. I had actually just watched 1 and 2 on Monday because of what's been happening, and it was nobody's fault that I spoiled the ending of this episode for myself, but my own. Ooh, Someone had posted like a meme for the ending of this episode, and they said like, if you watch Game of Thrones, click this. And the first link I saw for that, I clicked. I was like, yeah, you know, I'll roll the dice. I clicked on it, and it was just like a flow chart for Game of Thrones characters dying. And it's like, is your character alive? Yes. Prepare for her to die, him or her to die. is your character dead? It's like, well, there'll be someone else to take her place eventually. You know, and that the sex that I'm using, that's not a foreshadow. But that was once. And then the next one, I rolled the dice again, and I should have known that I had used all my luck because it was literally the end.
Yeah, the last scene.
Yeah, memeified, you know. And again, not anybody's fault but my own.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine someone seeing that on Facebook and like the preview being there, whereas on Twitter it was just behind a link.
It's just a link, right? You can choose to not click a link if someone says, hey, you know, here's a funny thing about Game of Thrones. You can just not see it. Jocelyn blocks Game of Thrones and any tweets with the words Game of Thrones or GOT in them.
Really?
Yeah, so she can avoid it. I mean, she just blocks it for the 2 days, I think, until she sees the episode, and then she either unblocks it or for maybe for the season. I don't really remember how long she ignores it, but she just completely ignores it because we don't watch live. You know, I talk about it on this show on Wednesday, so we usually watch Monday nights. Like I would say over dinner, but sometimes we watch something else over dinner if we're expecting it to be kind of a gruesome show, and then I'll watch Game of Thrones after. But it's a nice Monday night date night. And my experience was not something as what's the word? I didn't have the choice. I didn't have a link to follow or not follow. I basically had a Twitter post to read from someone that I normally enjoy tweets from, and they started off talking about Monday, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a funny Monday tweet. This is great, you know. And I get to the end, and the last thing he said was, you know, it was basically, you know, this Monday is a giant cup of Joffrey juice. And that spoiled the episode for me. And because I've read the books, I know what happens. But I don't know when they're going to do it or how they're going to handle it in the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after the first episode this season, you know that the wedding is coming between Joffrey and Margaery. But, you know, you don't know when, you don't know how they're going to handle it. So knowing what and when all that happens, you know, I specifically got spoiled. And it was an interesting situation where a lot of people are spoiling plot points for people watching the show that have not read the books. I got spoiled because I read the books. So only the people that have read the books know this little factoid, right?
Yeah, that's like, you know, AMC using the prison as a sort of like tease for the next season. It's not really a spoiler on the scale of what you're talking about, but it's a similar idea in the sense that if you read the comics, that building being in the background at the end of season two is a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not really, a spoiler, but it means nothing to me as just a Walking Dead TV viewer. Yes, I know. Oh, he does a podcast about zombies and he hasn't read The Walking Dead. What a loser. I'm working on it, but you
so
should see.
So is Jocelyn, actually. She's reading them right now.
Yeah, like I guess I should have put that in the reading section, but I have the compendium volume one and it's about big enough to crush a small dog. But it's stuff like that I'm cool with if it's for the fans. But when it's something like that, it's like, I don't know. It part of me is glad that I haven't read the Game of Thrones books. I read maybe the first 20 pages of the first one after seeing season one, and I was kind of like, I'm sure these are great books, but I guess I'm kind of already picked the race that I want to run, and that's the HBO series. And maybe down the road I'll read the books, but are they different enough to experience as two different stories?
See, and this is where I feel like we're getting to a point where the HBO series might start getting better than the books. There's basically book four and five were, it was supposed to be one giant book, and the publisher said, no, you can't put out 2,000 pages.
Yeah.
Like, so they had to chop it up. And what happens is you leave a lot of the main storylines that you're seeing now in the show, and you follow other characters for book four. Mm-hmm. And then I wouldn't say everybody, but then you return to more familiar territory in book five. But you can't do that. Like, you couldn't take all of the cast members that are currently on this HBO show and say, all right, you got the next year, 2 years off, because we're going to, you know, hire a bunch of new people to play new characters for the next year. Like, they're getting to the point now where I have to be very careful, especially talking about the show, because they're mixing plot points from book five even into into the third or fourth season of the show, which is technically the second half of book three. So they're starting to kind of mish and match, which is fine because technically they all kind of start to happen at about the same time. It's just that there's so much going on. It takes Martin books and books to cover it all.
So that's the other thing, too, is that I don't really want to spoil anything for myself by trying to sort out the timeline of the show in relation to the book. So, is it just small tidbits that are taken out of, like, book five and put into this season? Or is it, like, large moments, like happened?
It's little stuff. So far, it's just little stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we can get into that a little bit later in the show, the details of it. But, I mean, my main point was that, you know, when I say, you know, not cool, you just spoiled tonight's episode, pretty ticked off about it. And the response I get is, you know, read, period, the, period, books. As if, because the books are 10 years...
Did someone actually do that?
Yes, I am quoting. And this is supposed to be someone that I follow and generally like on Twitter.
That's not a valid... No. That is a... That is geeks turning into the jocks of Revenge of the Nerds. Like, that is not a valid response. Like, that's... Come on, guys. We're supposed to be the good people, you know?
Yeah. No, and this is the thing. Just because the books are 5 years old doesn't mean you can spoil an episode of a television adaptation that is 12 hours old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that doesn't give you an excuse. I mean, just because you're lording the fact that you've read the books, you know, congratulations. And like I said, this tweet specifically spoiled it for people that have read the books. I don't know if anybody that has just read the show, if they said, hey, here's a great big cup of Joffrey juice, if you not knowing what was happening in season four, you probably wouldn't know. Like, you probably wouldn't put two and two together as to what actually happened, right? Joffrey juice could just be like Joffrey getting angry, or, you know, Joffrey throwing wine on somebody, like, which happened. But, you know, like, you don't necessarily jump to the specific conclusion that I knew about with Joffrey and the conclusion to the show. Which is, I don't know why I'm avoiding spoilers right now, because we've already cleared
I was
all.
Doing it too.
Yeah, I just don't want to spoil the end of our episode with our big climactic talk
that's
at the
true.
End.
Because we are just going to string everybody along for 45 minutes and then bam, the end. No music, straight to credits.
Yeah.
Citadel Cafe, drop the gal.
Just drop the mic, right? But it all kind of rolled into what ended up being a larger problem for me. I mean, I've got a new policy. If you spoil Game of Thrones, I'm unfollowing you and I'm not going to bring you back. Like, it's disrespectful to anybody that likes this show. And you're right. You're essentially being an internet bully. And I don't remember his exact words, but my friend Kyle Ferguson, who's on A-Move TV, does A-Move Radio and the new one, Into the Nexus with Garrett Dills. He said that, you know, the culture of the spoiler kind of thing, the internet spoiler, not meme, but a trend, I guess, is, you know, in a good way, people are excited about it and they just can't wait to share their experience. And they now have the access. Twitter is just instant, holy crap, that just happened. You know, just like you said about
the water cooler of the internet.
Exactly, exactly, right? And that's great. But then he said the bad thing is that now people have the power to ruin your experience. And there are some people out there that enjoy that power. You know, like, you know, it doesn't take much to put the word spoiler in big bold letters at the front of your tweet. You know, and anybody reading Twitter Sunday, Monday knows, woo, you know, I mean, one, you should stay away from Twitter Sunday night. But I mean, if you're trying to read the news Monday morning and a tweet scrolls by that says spoiler, I'm not going to read it.
Well, like, I don't think spoilers are, you know, the venue for that type of content is not a public format.
No, precisely.
It's you stop what you're doing, you open up your email, you type an email to the Citadel Cafe and say, hey, you know what? I was just thinking about this episode. It'd be really great to just, here's my theory, here's what happened, blah, word vomit into email, and then we read it on the show.
Yeah.
Like I think, and it doesn't even have to be the Citadel Cafe, it could be any show, it can be your friend, who you know have watched the show, don't be...
Other that. People that have seen the episode, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't do it, and don't get me wrong. I mean, everybody thinks like that was an amazing episode. I need to like tweet my opinion right now. But then you kind of catch yourself and say, you know, who is going to read this?
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, like, for example, mm-hmm. I went to go see, I've got a recommendation before we move on. I went to go see Captain America last night.
Winter Soldier. Nice.
It is an absolute must see. Everybody that's listening to this episode of the Citadel Cafe has to see this in theater as soon as possible. It's amazing. It's interesting. So much fun.
I'm hoping to see it on Saturday, I think. Saturday afternoon.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's great. Cool. That's it. That's all I'm going to say, because that's a spoiler-free expression of how much I enjoyed the film. You know? I mean, again, and we went to go see it because we knew that so many people were talking positive about it, and we just knew because it's comic stuff. I mean, it's nerd territory. And Joss and I just knew that if we waited too long, we would end up getting spoiled online.
Well, there's already what I assume to be a Captain America meme out there. There's a few of them. There's the
Hail Hydra one. Really,
that one, yeah, that's the meme. I have no idea what that is, although I can assume what it is. But also, there's the cool Easter egg, which is not really a spoiler because you kind of have to get a freeze frame to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's him looking at a list of stuff and a list of stuff to do. I wouldn't consider that a spoiler, but it was certainly a really cool thing to see.
Because
he's been frozen for 60 years, and most shows you wouldn't really think to address that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's got a lot to it. There's a lot of heart. There's a lot of story. There's a lot of action. Like, I mean, it's everything you expect now from a Marvel comic movie.
Cool.
You know, well, like, it's got everything the Avengers had, except for it just, obviously, it focuses on Captain America. You know, and that's, it's fantastic. You know, I can't say enough about it. Joss and I really, really enjoyed it. Although, I was giving Joss a hard time. She really enjoys Chris, is it Chris Evans?
Oh, yeah, Chris Evans.
Yeah, I think that's him, yeah. So she rather enjoys him. I also had the same, I wouldn't say issue, I had the same experience when we went to go see Man of Steel with Henry Cavill. Yeah, I get to tease Jocelyn about it after. It's like, are you still drooling, dear? You gotta wipe your chin just a little bit.
I don't know. Ashley says like he's too big, but I don't know if
Evans or Cavill.
Not Evans. I don't think she's really seen like the Captain America. Although when we see it, I'll have to ask her.
He's big. They're both the same size now. Yeah, they've really been working out. These guys must put so much work into these roles. Like, I mean, I know firsthand what it's like to try and, you know, to work out and have to try and gain muscle. And oh my God, like, for these guys who are, I want to say, relatively slim guys normally. Like, it's not like they're big, stocky football players to begin with. I mean, they're athletic for sure, but they get really thick for these movies. And it, I mean, because they got to look like superheroes, right? I mean,
when he was in Fantastic Four, he was not ripped, but he was certainly in good shape, right?
Yeah, so
there's a big difference between the two.
So. Oh, yeah, there's a difference between looking like a runner and then looking like a super soldier, for sure. For sure. I mean, that's one of my big recommendations this week. To bring it back to the spoiler thing, I got an early birthday gift. So, not a spoiler, because it wasn't a giant secret. We kind of knew it was coming. But Jocelyn bought me a copy of WildStar.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the upcoming MMO. I mean, we had talked about it. She asked me if I wanted it when it became available for pre-order. And I said, I do. And that's a really thoughtful gift. But I don't know if they're going to come out with a collector's edition. And I wanted to wait because, I mean, like, I really love the art from the game. I've said it on the show before. And I thought, if they have an art book, like, that is a must-have for me. And they, not only does it not look like they're going to have one because they're launching in, like, a month and a half, but they've said as much to the opposite as that, no, there isn't one.
Yeah.
You know?
At the very least, there won't be a collector's edition, but I guess, like, I wouldn't be surprised if down the road you could get an art book.
Oh, yes, that could happen later. I think maybe the demand might generate a book later on, but they decided not to go with a collector's edition. At least not right now. It might be available later. I don't know. But what happened was, I was watching some of the coverage from PAX East after, you know, like, after this decision was kind of made. Because there was a sale on Green Man Gaming. So I was able to pick it up through there. Or I guess not I was, but Jocelyn was. I was watching some of the content from PAX, and this is not other people. This is not fans or people that are inside. This is Carbine. Most of the main devs are up on stage, and they're talking about the game. So I thought, hey, cool, great. I'm going to learn more about a game that I'm really excited to play. And they were talking about things that I've not played yet, like war plots, PvP, stuff like that. But then they decided they were going to talk about main story. Like, the you know, you're on this planet Nexus. There's a mysterious race called the Elden that have, like, a lot of really high technology, a lot of really advanced magic, because there's both in this universe. And the mystery is that the Elden have disappeared, and you're on this, you know, missing planet, and you're trying to sort out what happened. But then they started talking about some major story points, including, like, big pivotal things that happen at, like, level 35. So this is two-thirds through the game. And as soon as they started to talk about it, I went scrambling for the pause button on the iPad. Now, I was kind of listening and watching while I was doing dishes. So my hands were wet, I wasn't near the iPad, and I didn't get there in time. And I got spoiled on a major piece of content for this game by the developers 6 weeks before the game is even coming out. And I just... it's one of those things that is this trend that I see in media in general. And I mean, I wanted to ask you about this because I don't know a lot of, I like video games. I don't follow them as closely as you and Jocelyn do. Mm-hmm. Do you find that it's a big trend these days to have even developers give you the whole story, like give you the whole gambit as a marketing thing? Like, I feel like they're trying to appeal to this internet, you know, cultural shift of people wanting to know everything immediately as soon as they can. There's quote-unquote leaks of stuff, which I'm sure most of the time is just like, well, we'll put it in there and someone will find it and we're okay with that. It's not really a leak. It's like an engineered sort of seed that they want because it generates huge marketing buzz when someone thinks they found the hidden dungeon gear or, you know, the cost of something or, you know, like a hidden card in Hearthstone or like whatever these plans are that these developers have. Do you find that, you know, media that you follow, whether it's television, movies, video games, is giving you too much?
I think it's specifically with games, but in general, it's every medium that's doing it. And it comes down to two things. I think one, it's the long development cycles really lend themselves well to constantly have to be putting out new information. One of the best examples I can think of off the top of my head is... funny enough, a Nintendo title, Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. The development cycle for that is so long in the public's eye because Nintendo's like, oh, quick, Smash Brothers, it's happening. And this is like, the design doc isn't even done. It's just a new Smash Brothers is coming. And what that means is for a year, the developer is talking about the game they're going to build. And then eventually, once they have some sort of like design done, they have a website for Brawl when it came out in 2006. They had a website for a year and a half specifically devoted to revealing a new piece of information about the game every weekday for a year and a half.
God.
So there'd be, you know, there'd be the day where they say a new character and it's Sonic or whatever. But other days it'd be like a new item. It's a, I don't know, a cherry, you know, and that and they spend the day talking about the new cherry that they added to Smash Brothers. So that, it's a very basic example, and not very spoilery because the fun of Smash Brothers is the gameplay. But you know, you look at like a game that gets revealed and then spends 2 years in development until it comes out. The publisher has to think, okay, what are we going to talk about 3 months from now to let people keep this game in people's minds so they pre-order, so they you know, keep their pre-order. You know, it's something that more and more games are doing. And the other thing too is that they're also feeding their biggest fans. Like, the people that give the most money to these developers are the people who are just hungry for this information. The super fans, like you and I, Joel, in terms of wanting, like, knowing we want something and being like, okay, I'm hitting the stop button on all new information for this game or movie or comic or whatever, and I'm just gonna wait. Here's even my $60 for the product. It's in your hands. You can make interest on it. I don't care. But for the next 6 months, I'm going to wait patiently and not learn anything else about this game. But there are other people out there. It's like, well, if I'm going to pre-order, I need to know so much about this to make sure that my pre-order is still something that needs to happen, you know?
Yeah. I'm okay with that kind of information if it was related to gameplay and functionality, tech specs. Like, if they were saying, oh, all of our stuff is going to have, you know, four times as many polygons as ever before, or, you know, we're going to introduce this new game mechanic where you can, you know, fight three guys at once or for whatever reason. I've got Assassin's Creed on the brain because I finished that this week.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's like that kind of stuff I'm okay with. It's the story stuff that I find like, give me a premise. Like, you can give me a backstory, but if it's gameplay story, like, I mean, why wouldn't you want to drop your you know, players or your viewers in the lap of your story on day one and just let them ride the train? Like, I get, maybe it's the creator in me. Maybe I'm a little bit more sensitive because I write content, you know, for my comics and stuff like that. But I just, you know, like, I don't necessarily want to preview one panel at a time. I mean, it's not exactly a one-to-one ratio, but, like, you know, I don't post, you know, a four-panel comic strip one panel at a time.
Yeah.
Because I want it all to kind of, I want people to experience it in a certain way. You know, I don't want to post the punchline before I post the first. I don't want to post it out of order either, you know? Like, it just, and there's certain things that I've experienced playing more video games since I've been, you know, with Jocelyn, experiencing things like walking into new rooms or walking into new environments in WoW when we were playing that together, and just kind of looking around going, whoa, I've never seen this before. Like, you know, pick any raid or dungeon that, I mean, like, that I've never done. You know, when Jocelyn and I would go in for the first time, we're just like, this is amazing, because it would look so different than other things that we've done. And if I had seen screen caps and a walkthrough and all this kind of stuff out there, I mean, it's one thing if it's by fans, I can, you know, sort of avoid it. But I mean, if I'm, you know, sitting there interested about the game and 1 minute, you know, Blizzard was talking gameplay and new mechanics and new spells, and then all of a sudden said, oh, hey, by the way, this is what happens when the boss dies. What? You know, like, that's to me seems like a little bit of a mislead on the information that the developers are putting out there. I mean, I know we're talking about games because I feel like that's probably the easiest kind of common denominator. Well,
they do it for movies too. Look at Batman versus Superman, where it's like, they can't just announce that all these people are in the movie. They got to be like, and this person's playing this person, and this person's playing that person. Yeah. It would have been nice to have, you know, I don't care if Wonder Woman is going to be a huge part of the movie. It still would have been fantastic for her to be, like, they sure aren't treating her like they're going to have her as a central character in her own movie. So why not make a big surprise of it and say, like, Wonder Woman's in it, and the guy from Facebook is Lex Luthor. You know, like,
yeah,
they have an opportunity to go back to the good old days before internet, where it's you're genuinely surprised by this weird stuff.
I mean, I'm purposely staying away from a lot of the Star Wars stuff too.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff you just can't avoid, but like there other things are. I mean, they would never be able to keep it a secret if any of the major actors from the first, you know, from the original trilogy, we're going to make appearances. I don't think that would be, that would not be something they could keep secret. And I don't mind knowing that stuff personally. Mm-hmm. But how cool would it be to, like, I don't know, pick your favorite movie franchise, you know, and then have someone that was a key portion of that you didn't think was ever going to come back. You know, they make another, you know, set of movies, and then all of a sudden, the main actor from one story who you didn't know was going to be part of this new one. Like, for all you knew, it was a step forward. Everything is moving on. And, you know, there's a cameo from one of your favorite people. Like, they would never have been able to keep Ben Affleck and Batman a secret as part of being part of the Batman-Superman movie. And even if they came up with a different name, you know, like Superman, you know, Metropolis, or whatever they want to call it. But if they could somehow have managed to keep the fact that Batman was going to be in the movie a secret, how amazing would it be as a filmgoer to go in there thinking you're getting a Superman movie and then getting a Superman Batman movie? Like, people would lose their shit. You know, I mean, for that first kind of, you know, those first batch of people that would go see it, I mean, that they wouldn't be able to contain that. I mean, the people would get spoiled immediately. But I, again, like, I mean, there's a certain amount of what's what I'm looking for? Suspense that I want in my movies, even if they're pretty straightforward. Like, I mean, I don't have to be like, you know, murder mysteries, but like, I like being surprised. Like you said, Wonder Woman mm-hmm. having a surprise cameo would have been awesome.
But if they are making I just hope they're not making a big deal about Wonder Woman being cast as, and then have her be, you know, 15 minutes. Like, I think she needs to play a large role if they're giving, I want a Wonder Woman movie. I want Wonder Woman to be in these films. Mm. I think she's a really cool character. And the fact that I don't know enough about her is kind of, you know, DC's fault. Like, I feel like she is the holy, I guess she's part of the Trinity, right? Like, yeah. I'm not huge comics, but she is the Trinity. She's the Batman, Superman,
Wonder Woman. Yeah. Well, as far as the Justice League is concerned, like, she would be the main ones that I remember as far as the big five are Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Flash, and Martian Manhunter, and Green Lantern. So there's six that kind of spring to mind. There's lots of others. I mean, you get into, like, you know, Hawkman, and like, it extends and extends until you get like 50 or 60 heroes that all look the same. But yeah, I mean, I think that DC is planning the same sort of thing that Marvel has already cut the cake on, which is, you know, an Avengers movie. So I think there's a JLA movie coming.
That's $1 billion cake. They'd be stupid not to try to make their own, right?
God, yeah. Well, exactly, right? I mean, it's people will want it. I mean, if they do it right, it'll be great. You know, like, I enjoyed Man of Steel. You know, I enjoyed the Nolan films. I heard someone, I think it was possibly Garrett, actually mentioned that, you know, he really likes the Batman films. He's not so sure that Christian Bale was the best Batman, but, you know, like, the films themselves were good. They were dark. They had the right tone. And I think that DC with Man of Steel, again, a little bit gritty, you know, like not super polished, or not, it's polished, but it's not super shiny and happy. Like, there's a lot of kind of dark moments. And I feel like that is going to be an interesting way for, you know, DC to put some real peril in their movies. Not that Marvel isn't doing it, because again, like with something I liked about Captain America, there was some real peril, you know, like you don't feel like you're in a cookie cutter movie.
Well, he's a super soldier. You kind of to me, it's tough for a super soldier to be put in a sticky situation. But I'm glad that it sounds like Marvel's been able to sort that out. Whereas with the older Superman movies, it was like, don't worry, I have super strength, can see through walls, and my eyes shoot lasers.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, and therein lies a lot of people's complaint about Superman, is that it's pretty hard to kind of threaten him, you know, like,
oh, he's allergic to green, great, throw it at him.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day is gonna suck.
Oh, man. Kryptonite beer.
There's a hangover you don't want. I feel like Marvel has done probably a better job with their superheroes in terms of having faults, you know, like, they're easier to poke holes in than some of the Justice League people, because again, like, Wonder Woman is, I mean, she's not invincible, but my god, like, she's a demigod, you know, like, it's,
you got a lasso of truth. I mean, if that don't come in handy, I don't know what will.
exactly. Well, we should probably get going here and sure. Dive into some Game of Thrones stuff now that our spoiler conversation is over. But one thing that I did notice about the doc is a very cute picture of a puppy.
Oh yeah.
So you haven't mentioned this yet, but like, you and Ashley get a dog.
Yeah, so something we've actually been talking about for a long time is getting a pet of our own now that we have a house. And, you know, it just never was the right time. I mean, for the last year we've been talking about it, you know, it's like, we should get a dog, but, you know, it's not spring yet. Oh, we should get a dog. Well, it's spring, but we're planning a trip away. And then this year came around, and with the wedding, we're not really feeling comfortable spending a lot of money going to Nurtacular. So we're going to skip 2014. And then 2 weeks later, we were kind of, you know, the basement's not ready for a tenant, you know, spring is in the air. It's the perfect time to get a puppy. So I came to bed late one night and Ashley was still up. I'm like, what are you doing? Pulls out her phone. She says, look at this puppy. And I'm like, aha, it's a joke, right? And I look at this super cute puppy. And 2 days later, we were, you know, half hour out of town picking up this dog. And I've always wanted a pet. And Ashley's allergic to cats and dogs, and luckily this one's hyperallergenic, and far so good. So
cool. So what kind of dog is it?
So it is a half Shih Tzu, half Yorkie.
Okay. That explains why it's so tiny.
Yeah. Oh, it's super tiny. And she's about 3 months old. And so far, so good. She's very calm. Occasionally, she can have bursts of energy where she'll, like, run around the house. And I give her, like a piece of, you know, that yellow rope?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
I gave her a piece of yellow rope, and she just chews on that. Like, that's her chew toy, you know, because she's teething. So she'll, like, pretty much chew on anything.
Mm. Some rawhide sticks and stuff like that.
Yeah, she's still a little, her teeth are really small. So I don't know if she'll actually, like, get into them, but... Mm. No, she's been super quiet, but the interesting thing about a puppy when you crate train them is that they're like babies. They cry for, you have to let them cry. I mean, obviously you don't put your baby in a cage, but you know, I put her in the cage and she'll cry for like 15 minutes as you're trying to fall asleep, and eventually she'll like cry herself to sleep.
Right.
This sounds mean, but this is how you do it. And then she falls asleep, and then at like 2 a.m, the last couple of nights, she wakes up and starts crying, and you have to take her out to go to the bathroom. That's like, it's mind-boggling, and I don't want to wake up at 2 a.m. anymore. So I don't know.
Practice, my friend.
I know, and it's not so bad. I mean, she's super cute, so like, how could you not take her out? And I assume the same logic applies to actual babies. So
they're super cute, so you don't want to smother with a pillow. Yeah.
Oh geez, I would never ever think about doing
that.
I
know, I'm putting words in your mouth. I'm
teasing. I know. No, and I mean, it's really not a huge deal. Like, babies are obviously more responsibility. I'm not comparing puppies to babies, but with the puppy, you literally just, all right, take her out of the cage, take her outside. I have a fenced in yard, and it's like,
oh my God,
run and her, free.
Yeah, and her bladder must be the size of a thumbnail. I mean, she can't take that long to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, she goes, piddles, you know, runs back to the door, and she's back in bed in 10 minutes. So. But no, it's her name's Zoe. We've been watching a lot of New Girl.
I was wondering if that's where you guys got the name.
Yeah, so Ashley's a huge fan of that show, and when she saw Zoe and picked it, and I'm like, you realize Zoe's also the name of the main character, the actress who plays the main character on New Girl, and she's like, yeah, I know. It's like, okay. Well, yeah.
So it was intentional then?
I think so, and then I asked her, like, we've also been talking about, like, kids' names, and I said, would you ever name a daughter Zoe? And she's like, no. It's like, well, perfect. We have a dog named Zoe now. So it's interesting for sure. We'll see how it goes. But so far, so good.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to more cute dog pictures.
Mm.
I'm sure and that Facebook will be flooded with them.
She was barking at Slippers like not 20 minutes before we started recording.
You need to get that on film.
Oh, it is on film. But there's like two vines I just posted where she would literally just like straight up bark at the Slippers. It was weird. I wondered what she was barking at.
I don't think I follow you on Vine. I'll have to remedy that.
I think I posted it to Twitter, so you should be able to see them.
I'll check it out. Well, that brings us into the Winter is Coming session, and this is where we, of course, spoil the living crap out of the Lord of the Rings. Jeez, I'm off my rocker tonight. We could do that, too. No, this is where we talk about Game of Thrones. This is episode 2 of season 4. It's entitled The Lion and the Rose. A who's who of honored guests turn out for Joffrey and Margaery's wedding in King's Landing, but the king's taste in entertainment rubs many of them the wrong way. Meanwhile, Bronn gives a lesson to an unlikely pupil, happens to be Jaime Lannister. Bran's vision helps map out his journey. Stannis loses patience with Davos. These names are like tongue twisters. And Ramsay takes a perverse delight in his new pet. So I guess we can save the big one for last in terms of the wedding. But something I really enjoyed about the balance in this episode was that there's a lot of wit and humor written in amongst some pretty serious stuff. So, I mean, right off the bat, you've got, you know, Jaime and Bronn. Jaime's lost his hand and he needs to train with somebody that's not going to spread the word that Jaime can't fight for a lick right now. So Bronn, who is the sellsword that Tyrion has as a bodyguard, is going to be paid to train him, spar with him so he can learn to use his left hand as a sword hand. And there's all these great quips about, like, you know, is it going to be safe here when we train in secret? Is no one going to find us? And Bronn talks about the fact that he's screwing somebody else's wife. She's really loud. And this is where they come to hook up. So no one's found them yet. So it's going to be a pretty secret spot. I'm just like... he's Braun is incorrigible to say the least, and I mean we've mentioned before that we really enjoy his character, but I really enjoyed those scenes quite a bit with Jamie and Braun.
It's interesting, like Braun and Jamie are two interesting or really great characters for what I'm about to say, but there's also a lot of other characters that have this sort of personality where the one-liners are incredibly funny and witty, and you don't, this is the one thing I'm constantly surprised about this show, aside from like the, you know, the gut punches that it pulls on you, but it's also like just the dialogue that these characters have. It's not something you'd expect from a show like this, like a serious hardcore fantasy, but there's also these like witty, charming lines from Jamie, Braun, Tyrion.
Yeah, Tyrion, Olenna Tyrell, the grandmother on the Tyrell side. What's his face there? Prince Oberyn of Dorne. He's also pretty, he's got a forked tongue.
The new guy, not the new guy, but the guy who, in season three, I never thought he ever did this, but now that they've recast him in season four, he almost feels like another one of those characters. Like super witty. I think you guys were talking about this last week, some of his dialogue.
Oh,
I can't remember his name though.
You're talking about
the flower girl. What's his
name?
Yeah,
he's sweet on Daenerys, and his name is escaping me right now. Oh gosh.
He wasn't even in this episode, and I'm
No, they weren't. They weren't. He wasn't in this episode. You keep going, and I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see characters do that, and in the first season, it always felt like it was always Tyrion, and they've sort of expanded it to all the other characters. And I was curious, like, are they like this in the books? Like, I know George R. R. Martin has a hand in writing these episodes, but I wonder, is this a direct translation? Like those personalities from the book, do they have these sort of one-liners that kind of catch you off and make you kind of chuckle?
I certainly remember a number of them. Like, I know that the Olenna Tyrell, Tyrell, in particular, I remember distinctly having this air of, not impatience, but like, pretty matter-of-fact knowledge about, you know, these men will strut around like the roosters that they are, smacking each other over the heads of the swords, but you, when you really get down to the brass tacks of it, you know, there's a hell of a lot going on with us women, and you should know that. And it was kind of her conversations with Sansa in the books were very matter-of-fact. And then, of course, you're hearing it through Sansa's eyes, so Sansa is just kind of being taken aback by all these conversations, you know, that have already happened in the show, with Orlena Tyrell and Margaery, you know, and Margaery's the same way. She kind of gives it pretty matter of fact. Like, we know that, you know, Joffrey is awful, and we're going to do, you know, we're going to prepare for that. You know, like, we have a backup plan, and don't you worry about us. We can handle ourselves and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the characters are certainly written like that. Braun is pretty witty in the books, if I remember correctly. Tyrion, certainly. I feel like Sam from The Wall, Jon Snow's friend, is not. He's a little bit more whiny in the books, not necessarily witty, but I don't remember because it's been a little while. And a quick note: it was Dario Naharis is the guy that you're talking about overseas with Daenerys. That's the guy's name that was recast. And again, he also has some witty dialogue. And they're a little bit more at the point where they are right now. They're a little bit more lovey-dovey. But it's better in the TV show that they're not. Like, he's more of quick wit than kind of like these endless compliments. He seems to be complimenting her in the TV show, but it's a double thing. Like, he's giving her flowers, but he's explaining to her, you know, here's all the practical uses for this research that I've done for you about the land. Like, and that's from what I remember when they first meet in the books, that's not the case. He's just kind of, you know, you're beautiful, blah, blah, blah. He just kind of repeats himself.
Well, I think they kind of did that in season three. I mean, not to get stuck on an older bit, but during season three, there is a moment where the first time they meet, it's like, yeah, I'm naked, so what? And they kind of have that moment where it's like, he's like, oh, you're so beautiful, ah, ta-da, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt weird and awkward.
Mainly well, it didn't stick because he was an ugly son of a gun.
That too. Yeah. I don't like, for a show like Game of Thrones, like they're not afraid to cast, you know, not so pleasant looking. It's not a CW show. Let's
no,
put
exactly.
It that way.
Yeah. No, precisely.
But when it comes to a character who needs to look devilishly handsome, mm-hmm. you know, you don't kind of skip on that. You know, I think you kind of have to match, you know, what you're trying to get. But no, that's good. I'm so torn. I mean, I guess the worst thing he's done is push a little kid out of a window. But ever since then, he's kind of redeemed himself. Not redeemed himself, but come back to the light.
He's you got know? Deeds on both sides of the fence.
Well, it feels like, the mother, Catelyn, knew that he pushed her son out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was a bit, there was a start of a redemption there when Catelyn made him swear he would find her daughters, mm-hmm. you know? So I feel like maybe he is kind of turning to the quote unquote good side. There's no good side. There's no bad side. It's all a big mess of gray in this show.
A lot of gray, yeah.
There's some lighter gray and there's some darker gray, and I feel like he is more on the lighter gray side.
Yeah. At the very least, he's developing a conscience.
Oh yeah, I think we see that, and I think mainly that conscience comes from, Brienne.
Brienne or Brienne, I think is the two.
Yeah.
I say Brienne because that's how the audiobook pronounces it.
Oh.
So that's what gets stuck in my head. But that could just, that could be incorrect. I'm assuming because it's an official audiobook, it's probably all right. But
the tall chick.
Yeah, the really tall chick. And she is really tall.
She's a female mountain. Let's just,
yeah,
like the mountain, not like a literal mountain. And she doesn't kill people for fun, so I guess she's not.
But capable.
Yeah.
Capable, yeah. Well, I think that, you know, one of the other really witty parts of this episode, and Jocelyn had mentioned while we were watching it that it was probably her favorite part of the episode, and easily, I think, two of the best written characters in the series so far in HBO mm-hmm. is Tywin Lannister and Olenna Tyrell. And they had an exchange last year that we talked about. This year they were walking and discussing war and weddings and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I don't remember the quotes exactly, but man, it was just there's a respect and there's a threat all at the same time whenever those two are walking together, you know, like it's a real treat to see two very talented actors dealing very well-written dialogue, mm-hmm. you know, for scenes like that. And another thing that came to a head too was Cersei and Tywin speaking with Prince Oberyn, and I don't remember his lady friend's name, but like the three or four of them were all standing around. Granted, it was Oberyn that was doing most of the talking, and he was just insulting Cersei constantly, and it was glorious. It was so well done. It was all very polite, formal slams that you can't really argue, because technically once Joffrey and Margaery got married, Margaery's the queen. That makes Cersei nothing. You know, the king's mother, like you're not the queen regent anymore. Like this is official stuff, you know? And I thought that was, you know, he kept on pointing it out that she was the former queen regent. And I thought it was great because you could see her teeth grating every time he mentioned it. It was amazing.
Well, she's a really great actress, and she was. I only remember her from 300, and I think she might have been in the Sarah Connor Chronicles or whatever. But but she's really good in Game of Thrones, and you really feel her hatred for pretty much everybody who crosses her path, even her own twin brother. You know, I think that might have been, again, it's all mashing together. That might have been the first episode. But she is just, that is developing into something. I know it's been going on for four seasons, but that's going somewhere and it's going to blow up. And I should remind everybody when I talk about this, I have not read the books, so mm-hmm. I have no idea what's happening. So when I say I think everything's going to explode in her face, in a bad way for her. Like, I think that'll happen. And I'm not talking about this episode. I'm talking about, like, something to her personally.
Right. I mean, but, in this episode in particular, you can really start to see the parallels between Joffrey's behavior and hers.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, she has such little power. She goes to, you know, the other people that she knows will respond to her when she swings a big stick, like the Maester, when she interrupts him. And again, that was another funny part of this episode, where you get this, you know, quote-unquote frail old Maester, even though we know he's faking, talking to this young lady where he's, you know, she's got a question about a medical issue. He's like, come back to my examining room and we'll take a good look at you. And he's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, and she interrupts him and just but then it goes from a very light moment to her basically threatening him, threatening his life, swinging her weight around as best she can because she can't do it with anybody else. She tries it with her brother. Her brother says, shove it. You know, like she tries it with, I mean, she certainly can't do it with her dad. Because, you know, she's going to be expected to marry Loras Tyrell. There's a couple of other things that she was trying to do that were going nowhere. I don't know if her and Tyrion have had much of an exchange this season. But, again, like, there's just... You can see that she's very frustrated with her loss of stability, you know, with what's going on.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to her as the season progresses, especially after the events of this episode. But, well, I mean, this episode in particular is one of those where I'm like, I just wish I was caught up on the books so I could find out what happens next. But I'm also kind of glad that this is not like an ending. There are, you know, 8 more episodes to go, lots more breathing room to get more Game of Thrones content. But yeah, her storylines are always interesting. So I'll be interested to see what happens next with her.
We were surprised too, because we had thought the wedding was going to be like a mid-season event.
Yeah.
And we were kind of concerned because we thought, oh God, like, I mean, I understand that this, I mean, when you read the books, things like feasts and weddings and these kind of events take forever to explain. Like every last little detail is, you know, scribed to the letter. So it takes a long time for these things to happen. When that really wouldn't fly as a very entertaining television show, would be like, you know, 5 episodes of planning this wedding. So we were surprised that it happened so quickly. And it really thought, oh gosh, like they're really going to cover a lot of ground. As a book experience, you know, I remember reading the book when the Red Wedding happened, which was the finale of season 3, where Robb Stark and his mother die. Mm-hmm. And really shortly thereafter, Joffrey dies. It's kind of in pace. Like it's not really out of place. But man, like it just, when you, as an experience for the first time, when both of those things happen, you're kind of like, well, wait, what are they going to do now? Like, you mean the person who you thought was the Superman hero is gone. You know, the person who you thought was the 19-year-old Darth Vader is gone. So who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? And it's like you were saying earlier, there's a lot of gray and it just depends on who's like the darker gray and who's not. And It really kind of, the thing I like so much about Game of Thrones that other properties suffer from, and I'll use like the old Spider-Man 3 as an example, is a movie that suffered from too many villains. It didn't have a focus, right? Because they were just these, all the villains were bigger and badder and bolder, and it was just too much. You couldn't really figure out who was the main threat. But in Game of Thrones, you've got the Lannisters kind of as a whole. You've got the Boltons, who are kind of an extension of the Lannisters. And then you've got the White Walkers. Those are like the three main bodies that are threatening, you know, most of existence. And it's just enough that you're just kind of always looking over your shoulder as a viewer as to what's going to happen. And it's not so much because it's spread out with like many, many characters, like their families, their houses. They're not like, you know, it's not like Tywin is the only bad guy and then there's two or three other people. Like there's, it's more just kind of groups of people, mm-hmm. and it feels more threatening, I find, and it feels more like the characters that you enjoy are in more peril.
Well, it's not. Yeah, you're right. Like it's not Harry Potter where there's the main tyrant. You know. He who shall not be named. Yeah, Voldemort. and it's just a splinter down of all his followers and the people he uses to infiltrate Hogwarts and stuff. Like that is a typical, like, you know, there's a main antagonist and then he has like a bunch of underlings. Whereas in Game of Thrones, you know, you have these bad guys who are controlling or at least manipulating large armies of people. But there's multiples of that. And there's like people separated by continents mm-hmm. and people separated by giant walls of ice. You know, like there are even factions that aren't even considered, you know, they're not bad people. They're just naturally evil, like the White Walkers. Like, I'm sure they're not bad people. They just kill people. That's just what they do. You know, and mm-hmm. that's another thing that's happening is you got the people, you know, the White Walkers coming down from the north and all the, you know, the Blackguard fighting, is the Blackguard? The Crow or whatever?
The Night's Watch.
Yeah, the Night's Watch fighting the cavemen, you know? So we don't know what's going to happen there, too. Like, there's just so much going on. And Joffrey kicking the can, or at least dropping the juice or whatever you want to call it. Like, him dying was a surprise to me because it was like, I kind of thought that he would be the one to stick it out. You know, I thought he would be, although that would, to be honest, that would have been kind of boring having him stick around for the entire series. I mean,
yeah. And you're kind of, on one hand, like you kind of don't want to have to stomach the obnoxious boy king for the whole season. Yeah. But the other hand is just like, you hate him so much. I mean, mm-hmm. and as a tip of the hat to, is it Jake? What's his name? Jake Green, yeah. Jake Gleason, Jack Gleason, sorry. The actor that plays Joffrey. I mean, he gets under your skin. He you know, his nails on a chalkboard. He makes you want to punch him. But not because he's a bad actor. It's because you just hate the character so much. So, I mean, like, you know, hats off as a kind of a finale, you know, to his performance as King Joffrey. Is that, like, you really just despise how much of an ass he is.
Well, he came a long way. I mean, through four seasons, or I guess three full seasons and a couple episodes, like, that character came a long way from just a sniveling, spoiled brat to, you know, the king of the United Kingdoms. Like it's a long way, and he was a dick the whole way through it, mm-hmm. and just treating people with the utmost just vile. You know, he was just a villain, and even in this episode, I kind of wish I hadn't spoiled it for myself, because if I hadn't, I still would have felt like all the stuff leading up to the end of the episode wouldn't have felt out of place, even though it was a little bit heavy-handed that he was being super obnoxious and evil to everybody. But then again, it's his wedding. He's the center. He shouldn't be the center of attention. If there's anything I learned about wedding planning, it's the wife, the bride who is the center. And, yeah. You know, all the more reason for it. Like, that makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
But in this, it's like Joffrey is taking advantage of being in the spotlight to just be his worst. Mm. So I don't think that would have surprised anybody that it was a little heavy-handed in this episode, until you get to the point when he's writhing on the ground. Like, oh, this is the point where that spoiler is like, oh yeah, I guess this is where he dies. But I wonder what people would have thought. And I feel as though I kind of ruined the episode of the Citadel Cafe because I spoiled it for myself, you know. I wonder what a person's reaction, and maybe in the future you'll have someone on who wasn't spoiled and can get their reaction, but I wonder what was going through their mind as it was happening.
Well, I can tell you right now, because just after we finished watching the movie last night, mm-hmm. Captain America, I checked my phone, because of course you've had your phone off for a couple hours and you want to make sure that you haven't missed anything important. I had one message: OMG, the little fucker king is dead.
And this person had known you'd watched it already?
Yes. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, because I gave her the files.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that text was from my mother.
Oh.
Jocelyn and I have had an absolute roar watching Mom and Barry, my stepdad, watch Game of Thrones for the first time. Because they're not on Twitter. Mom checks Facebook like once a day. Like, she checks Twitter a little bit in the mornings, but mostly she's following like me and Jocelyn and a couple of news channels. Like, she really is not so steeped in the internet that this stuff gets to her. Mm. So when she watched those two episodes, like, I think they watched back to back episode 1 and 2, probably like the same as you did. Mm-hmm. And they were floored. So like when Ned Stark dies at the end of season 1, Mom thought it was a dream. She was like, yeah, they didn't kill him. It's Sean Bean. They didn't kill him. And then they go back to the, you know, season 2, episode 1, head on a stick. Holy shit, he's dead. Like, they've been completely slammed by all of the big gut punches, like you said, in Game of Thrones. So when we get spoiled, we can at least live vicariously through Mom.
Okay, good. Just great. That's good, because I was worried that it was still a huge impact. I actually kind of felt like, it's like, oh, really? That's how he goes, eh? Like, Rob Stark gets his almost literally his heart taken out of his chest, and little shit gets poisoned. I mean, come on, really?
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I don't remember from the books. I mean, he gets poisoned in the books. It's very, very similar. The whole thing actually is very similar, including the performance, like the dwarves and the costumes and all the reenactment of like Sansa's father's death and or brother's death, I guess. Like, all that kind of stuff was all very, very accurate. I think in the books they had the dwarves riding like big boars, like tamed boars, but obviously that would have been too difficult for the show. I thought the television version was funnier. Like, it just having them dressed up in costumes with like fake horses strapped around their waist and stuff. I thought that was well done. Where's it going with this? The way that he dies. I thought it was better in the show, because things like the visuals, the sound, the gurgling, you know, like all of that stuff, wine coming out of his nose, like, and his eyeballs basically bleeding and kind of going like off center. Like, if you looked at the very last, when he dies, his eyes are not straight. Like,
he looked a little his face was melting.
Right. And I just like,
grossed me out.
Well, yeah. Know? No matter how much you hate Joffrey, that's still just disturbing to watch. I mean, even when it's someone you just loathe in this show dying, to watch that kind of suffering, it's just, it really kind of makes you squirm.
And well, you got to remember also, he's still a kid.
He's very young looking. I mean, like, I don't know how old Jack Gleason is, but he's probably in his 20s. But he looks quite young. He looks like a teenager. And they certainly portray him as such in the show. So it's like watching a young kid choke to death. Like, it's really out there. I found, and you can speak to this having been spoiled ahead of time, because of course I was as well. So I know the wedding is happening, and I know that Joffrey's going to die at the end of the episode. But the whole time that wedding was happening and that speech from Joffrey was happening as he's walking around with the wine and as Tyrion is being paraded around and embarrassed, like, I could still feel the tension. Like, I could still feel myself being on edge, like I'm watching a tense episode of The Walking Dead. Despite the fact that I know what is going to happen and when it's going to happen, I was still kind of on edge. And I feel like that's a kind of a testament to the quality of the show, considering that I already know the ending and I'm still kind of like anxious.
Yeah, I was more worried for, like, as I was watching it, I had forgotten that he was going to die. And all I'm thinking about is like, really? You're marrying this guy? You should be concerned. Yeah. Or like, really? This is your son and you've lost control? You should be concerned. And then Tywin's watching this happen, and how does he feel comfortable with this? You know, like, he's always got this stoic look to his face, but deep down you could probably think like, man, he's got to be a little concerned that his the king that he has put there is acting like a child, and there's no way you're going to be able to control that. But really, it was Tyrion that I was just more upset about. Like, he does nothing to deserve the treatment he gets from everybody in this world. I mean, I'm not saying just in a negative standpoint. All the positive stuff that he gets, the respect he gets from the prince's brother, like, all that stuff is great, but just the hatred that he gets from his own brothers and sisters and nephews is disturbing and just gross. And in this episode, as he's trying to leave, like, I was like, oh, just get out of there. You do not want to be, you've taken enough. And no, Joffrey just has to keep roping him back in just to give him one more gut punch, you know? He doesn't deserve it.
No, I agree. And I mean, right up to the last minute when Joffrey points at him.
Yeah, that's like his final, like, little stab. Yeah. And I'm like, really, dude?
Yeah. Not that, I think Cersei would have reached that. Reached that conclusion
they were all, anyway. Yeah, like, Cersei, the first thing she would have said, even if he hadn't pointed, would have been, sorry, would have been the, Tyrion, and you killed my only son. Or, well, yeah. At least the one that was still being casted. So... Yeah, it's interesting, but I have a theory as to who, because we know, well, okay, I assume it wasn't Tyrion that poisoned him, and I'm glad this isn't a video podcast, because, like, this is the type of show that even if you're not going to say anything, like, visual cues can be like, oh, that's not true. But my opinion is that it wasn't Tyrion. How do I put this? But there's two variations on my prediction, in that it is Tywin that did it, because he realizes he's not going to be able to control this guy, and he's the hand of the king, right? Like, I don't know if the power goes to the queen, right? I can't remember.
As far as just, like, the show is concerned, the power goes to the queen. She is technically the queen, but even when the king was in power and alive, like, even when Robert Baratheon was around, the hand of the king is doing most of the heavy lifting and most of the hammer swinging, whereas the king is kind of always just in court and hearing people and going to meetings. The hand is really kind of more of the military commander, more of the real business of keeping the kingdom going and running things. The hand tends to be there at those meetings talking about loans and coins and money and military strategy, when the king is not, because the king is often, like, out hunting or doing kind of lavish things, like appearing at balls or weddings or traveling or doing whatever. So you're right. Tywin does stand to gain a lot of power without dealing with the contest of Joffrey's, immaturity.
Yeah, I think he gains. Yeah, he definitely gains more by him being out of the picture, and that brings me to, like, the next step, possibly an agreement between Tywin and the Margaery's mother, grandmother,
Olenna,
and I mean, they seem pretty close and strategic, so I wouldn't put it past them to be like, hey, if we get this little kid out of the way, I'll control, the Margaery, and you can just run the kingdom. That Margaery only wanted to be famous and be powerful, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that's where this goes, and I don't know if we see that in season 4. I wouldn't put it past this show to have it just like, yep, Joffrey's dead, let's deal with the fallout, but we're not going to find out who did it for a while. And that probably means Tyrion rots in a prison cell, but I think we'll learn more next week as to his fate. Because he was just kind of being grabbed, and he's like, well, shit, I'm in the wrong... Like, as he's looking at the cup, he's like, really? Really?
Yeah, like, a lot of times, like, I mean, as viewers, you're kind of watching Tyrion, like, don't pick up the cup! Don't,
yeah, like, really,
no,
dude?
No, you touched the cup. That's a bad idea. Yeah, no,
But running wouldn't have helped either.
No, and I mean, I could be misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure in the books that... I thought that Tyrion had a drink of wine as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, it was weird. I'm not entirely sure. In a good way, it's been a long time since I've read book 3 and 4. So as they march through this season, I'm a little foggy. on some of the smaller details. So there's also no promise that it's going to be precisely the same. I mean, a really good example of this, you know, to move things forward is to, on one of the other really interesting points about the show, or this episode in particular, was that we get to talk with the Boltons, you know, Theon Greyjoy, who is now being referred to as Reek, who has basically been turned into Ramsay Snow's pet. Ramsay being the guy that was torturing him in the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Also a very good actor, a British actor that I really enjoy. They did this a little bit different because Reek and the thing with Theon is all definitely part of the stories. From what I can understand, the actor that plays Theon was guaranteed X amount of episodes to appear in.
Oh, interesting.
So this is one of those things where the television show and the contracts are kind of forcing their hand on when they reveal certain aspects of the story. And I felt it was a little bit of a disservice to the reveal that Reek and Theon were the same person.
Oh, so in the book they sort of...
In the book, when they tell the story from the first person, it's Reek you're listening to. It's Reek that's talking about all this stuff about his master and about being good and sleeping with the dogs and being disgusted and running from this and doing all this stuff. And it doesn't take a lot to put it together. Like, you do sort of figure it out about a chapter before there's the actual reveal where it's spelled out for you. And so, but that's an entertaining sort of like, oh, geez, you know, and they really kind of go into depth as to what, you know, how it all came about. Now, that's not something that's easy to do in television because, of course, as you're writing along with him in the book, you're experiencing all these things that is happening to him and that he's doing. But as soon as you show the actor on television, you're going to go, oh, that's Theon.
Yeah.
Right. So that's it's one of those things where you actually have an advantage as an author to kind of have that suspense.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think with Theon now being Reek, it's just really, really gross.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, like just all the stuff that's going on in the episode with Reek is that he's broken. And Theon did some pretty awful stuff in season 3. Mm-hmm. And in this show, it's really easy to say like, oh, man, what an ass. I hope he gets what he deserves, and then this happens, and it's more of like a careful what you wish for kind of scenario,
mm-hmm.
where he got much more than he deserved. Like, you wanted to see him dead, not turned into a slave that has been tortured, and you mention in the books that it's a reveal. You know, you don't really get to know that it's Theon, and I'm projecting, I don't really know, I haven't read the books, but I assume... A TV trope here would be, like, they even tell him about Rob dying, and he flinches but doesn't break.
Mm-hmm.
And I want, like, a TV trope would be a key pivotal moment when he snaps out of his slavery to, you know, be good one final time. But knowing Martin, he'll probably do the opposite, or at least you kind of hope. But then maybe because you assume he'll do the opposite, he'll actually do the opposite of the opposite. And again, I don't know. And this is where this show, you start to try to predict it, and it just turns right over. That, you know, with the Joffrey stuff, like, that is hard to predict because that would be the, it's like, oh, well, if they kill Rob, the next thing they do is kill Joffrey. But no, that'd be too simple.
Yeah, you know? Well, and that's the thing is like that, and that's where Game of Thrones is, you know, it's an HBO show, not a CW show. Like, mm-hmm. Your bad guy does not live for the full 22 episodes until the end when the good guy wins and the bad guy loses. You know, like, there's certainly a lot of situations so far in this series where the good guys lose and the bad guys also lose. And I feel like the Boltons are one of those vague threats that I was, you know, alluding to earlier where, you know, yes, they receive orders from Tywin because Tywin has promised them rule of the North,
mm-hmm.
but they also have their own agenda, you know, and Roose Bolton, who is the head of the household, is furious with Ramsay for flaying and neutering and basically destroying the value of Theon Greyjoy as a hostage to then barter with, I can't remember the Greyjoy's head, but the head of the Greyjoy household, because the Greyjoys currently hold Moat Cailin, which is a key fortification in the north, and it's keeping Ramsay from having from his armies returning fully to the north, so that he can take over Winterfell and, you know, like basically rule the north. Because previously Ramsay was Stark Bannerman, and that was the big betrayal at the Red Wedding. So it's one of those things where, you know, you just don't quite know where Roose Bolton is going with this. You know, like, he obviously had plans to, trade Theon, and now, like, you're kind of like, you're asking Ramsay Snow, his bastard son, to prove himself, you know, to redeem for the mistakes that he's made so that he can make a better name for himself. And it's just like, oh God, there's so much that can go wrong by asking this Ramsay guy to impress his father, because his father is already an evil son of a bitch, and Ramsay is right out to lunch.
Oh, he's crazy. Like,
hunting people and stuff. Like, just, I really get irked with, like, animal attacks. And they do a really good job of showing this defenseless girl running through the woods as she gets shot through the calf with an arrow and then eaten by dogs. And they don't show it, which is brilliant. Yeah. You know, like, they give you the noises and the screaming and the gurgling, but they don't show you what's actually happening. And it just irks me. You know, it's just like when they were skinning his finger, like when Theon was prisoner and Ramsay was torturing him, and they showed the beginning of him removing the finger, like the flesh from a finger, and you're just like, oh God, like, just I can't even imagine. And I mean, there's a lot of kind of crazy psychological stuff that's happening as people are being brutally maimed, and it's really kind of gets under your skin, and it kind of makes you think about, like, what's going to happen in the north as the Boltons get more and more power.
Yeah, it's almost like Tywin is creating another enemy for him to face down the road. You know,
like, you don't give these bad people even more power.
And really, like, sure, they did cut the head off of the North Rebellion. They took out Rob and Rob's mother and wife, but at what cost, you know, down the road? Like, is he just thinking, like, you know, we'll get to them eventually? But, or maybe he's just like, oh, they're in the North and it's the North's problem, you know? I don't know. It almost seems like a bad idea to let these guys off the chain and on their own. Because Ramsay, yeah. If it's Ramsay who's the crazy one, you can imagine that Roose is smart, but also just as nuts.
Yeah, you know? I think that the difference is that where Ramsay is more passionate about his actions, Roose is more calculative. You know, he's just as vicious, but it's a calculated strike when you're talking about Roose Bolton, and it's a crime of passion when you're dealing with Ramsay Snow. And Ramsay Snow's the loose cannon. You know, like, he's like the Joker. You know, like, he's just out there with the razor blade, and good Lord knows what's going to happen. You know, like, he's just right out there.
If he asks you to make a pencil disappear, don't stick around.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that, you're right. It's the perfect comparison. He is the Joker of the Game of Thrones, world.
Yeah. I say that is pretty apt. The last thing I want to touch on before we need to wrap this up, and that is we had some time at Dragonstone with Stannis, and we get to meet his wife, and Selyse Baratheon is her name, and obviously Davos, who I'm sure we both enjoy,
He's the only sane one on that island.
Oh my gosh, I guess he is. I mean, like, there's a great deal of religious zeal happening as Selyse's brother, so the brother-in-law to the king, or the who they feel is king, Stannis, being burned at the stake because he doesn't believe in the Lord of Light. I mean, it's essentially a religious culling. If you believe in the seven gods or anybody that's not the Lord of Light, you're going to get lit on fire. And what we lost in Joffrey in terms of a obnoxious boy king wielding, you know, unruly power, we gain in Selyse Baratheon, who is just this, just one-tracked mind, the Lord of Light knows all. He's maimed my daughter, so I intend to cleanse my daughter through physical abuse. Like, it's just ruthless, the things that are coming out of her mouth, all in the name of the Lord of Light, mm-hmm. you know? And, I mean, Stannis will have no part of it. He goes along with Melisandre, and he goes along with the Lord of Light stuff, but when it comes to his daughter, he's like, nope, you do not touch her, I will end you, you know?
And well, it's really creepy, the type of stuff they're showcasing with the Lord of Light and these cleansings, and they almost made it seem like, oh no, no, that isn't them screaming. That's just the sin coming off of their body. Yeah, you know, that's not bad. Yeah, that's good.
Can you hear the release? Can you hear the relief? They're now one with the Lord of Light or something like that. I mean, all these things that Selyse says out loud, but she's basically saying to herself to make herself feel better about what just happened. You know, and I mean, she is a special kind of crazy. You know, as far as I'm concerned, with only just one episode, and this kind of stuff, I mean, I find it terrifying, mainly because there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn. Hi, Zoe.
Sorry.
there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn between, obviously, the Lord of Light and other, you know, religious groups in the real world. There's always a balance. I mean, religious is a touchy subject, but there's always a balance between all of this kind of stuff. What they're showing in Game of Thrones is what happens when there is an imbalance, you mm-hmm. know, in people's mind, where they're using, you know, religious belief as an excuse for deplorable behavior. And, you know, like that kind of stuff, you know, it exists. I mean, like we all remember stories of cults and, you know, these different things that happen in the world and, you know, horrible things that, you know, world wars were fought over. And this just harkens all of that, and it's a part of Game of Thrones that feels very real, you know, as far as our modern world is concerned, and I think that's why I find it so disturbing.
Well, it's interesting, the parallels, like, you know, even to history, in the sense that, you know, you have, oh, the seven gods, that's wrong, you know, mm-hmm. there's no such thing as seven gods, seven heavens, seven hells, there's one god, there's one heaven and hell, like, that's an argument that happened thousands of years ago mm-hmm. when Christianity was just, you know, starting up. It's like, oh, no, no, you guys are wrong, there's one god, that's how it works. And the parallels that they draw between the history of you know, the human race and the history in Game of Thrones, I'm surprised Fox News hasn't jumped on this. Like, oh, they're making Christianity look bad, and this mm-hmm. is an anti-democratic conservation, blah, 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 insert buzzword here type of message. You know, George R. R. Martin is a hippie, you know? And I just, you know, you got to understand that, like, there's a difference here in the sense that it's not really a comparison to Christianity making it look bad. It's this one evil person who is using religion and these people who are obviously trying to find some sort of good in the world, and they latch onto this idea of the Lord of the Light, but it's not doing what the Red Lady is saying it's doing. Really, in my mind, it's empowering her,
mm-hmm.
but not as the Lord of the Light. Like she says in this episode, there's a bit of foreshadowing where she goes, there's a Lord of Light, but there's also, like, evil. I can't remember what she called it, but basically the devil of this religion.
Right, yeah.
And I think, like, and we know for a fact that that is who she's working for. I mean, she did give birth to a little smoke ghoul or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's definitely some... She's got some dichotomy happening. You know, she's got some interesting secrets that mm-hmm. no one knows, you know, as of yet. I mean, not even me, you know. And I feel like that's part of the threat is the unknown. You know, like in that, yeah. It's the same reason why, like, we know so little about the White Walkers, and they're obviously a huge source of magical evil. And we know nothing other than that they're really hard to kill and they're really angry.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, and that could all come to a, like, that could be book six, even like the last few chapters of book seven type content, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're so far, and I was kind of like at the during this episode, they kind of treat like the War of Five Kings as being over, like Robb Stark is dead, the Baratheons have all been but defeated except for Stannis, who's kind of crazy. Like, that's it's considered over as a conflict, and you wonder, it's like, well, where do we go from here if that conflict's over? It's like, well, no, you got to remember, there's so many other fires being stoked in different areas that even if all of those, you know, things clashed, there's still one more thing out there, like the White Walkers or this, you know, demon red lady chick. Like, I have no idea where it's going.
Yeah, no, and I think that's part of what makes the Game of Thrones series so compelling, you know, is the fact that it's from all sides, and not to mention, it not only is it from all sides, but some of those sides just change directions. Like, one minute you're fighting somebody, the next minute they're on your side and they're fighting your enemy, you know, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, you know. It becomes very sticky very quickly, and I'm it's the bends that it's taken so far, I find both intriguing, you know, obviously from a story perspective, but refreshing, you know, from an unpredictable standpoint. Like, it's, even having read the books, it's still hard to know, you know, what's going to happen next and how. You know,
well, you don't know when stuff's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking at the top of the show, like, you know, certain thing is going to happen, but you don't know when.
Yeah.
And reading
books four and five was not a good experience as far as chronologically trying to keep everything straight, because they separated things out that happened at the same time. So it felt a little bit disjointed. I enjoyed book five much more than I enjoyed book four because it was more familiar territory and I was able to kind of piece things together later on. But I'm very curious to see how they're going to move forward with the show.
Do they need like a machete order or a machete order for Game of Thrones, where you just, okay, cut the spine at pages 200 and splice with the first three chapters of book three, and now you have the Game of Thrones in chronological order.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that much of an issue. I think all anybody needs to know if they decide to go ahead and read the books is that book four and five happen at the same time.
Interesting.
So while book four is happening, also the stuff in book five is happening. It's kind of like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a really good example. I can't think of anything in modern media right now that's a proper example, but, well, I mean, I guess you can go with like comic books, like when comic books do crossovers, you know, like when Superman does, you know, books 21, 22, 23, and then he goes over to Batman number 7, and he's there for 3, and then he's back over to his other books, and all of that stuff was supposed to kind of happen simultaneously. Or, you know, if you want to know what Batman was doing right before he met Superman, but at the same time that Superman was fighting Lex Luthor, then you got to read Batman's number, you know, 5, 6, 7, and like that's the kind of thing it feels like, is that it's not that hard once you kind of wrap your head around the timeline.
Yeah, and kudos to the writers and the directors of this show, because one of the main complaints we have about The Walking Dead is that the episodes where they jump from set of characters to a different set of characters is that it gets really jumpy, and you kind of feel like you take one small step forward rather than the, you know, the long jump forward you want to see based on the show. Like, I need to see where it goes next. And I think Game of Thrones does this very well in the same amount of time with more stuff in the pot going on. Like, they touch on 5 or 6 sets of characters in this episode, yet you still get the progression you want. Like, sure, you get a mini update on Bran, but you don't need to spend more time, like, so much more time with Bran. Like, you kind of just, okay, where is he? Great, let's go back, jump over here, and get some more with the, oh, Jamie, he's just training? Great, that was funny. Let's move over here. It gives small droplets to the little storylines you just want to check in on, and then, like, spoonfuls of content on the storylines that you want to see more of right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on. Well, that I think that'll wrap up both our talk on Game of Thrones and this episode. We've run a little bit long, but that's good, because that's what podcasting is about, as far as these big episodes for Game of Thrones is concerned, I like it when we can really dig into really interesting episodes. I'm sure that there will be some, you know, mid-season filler that will not take up so much time later on the season. But so far, so good. This episode of the Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the CitadelCafe.com/live. Our mobile stream is provided by AlphaGeekRadio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can, of course, download the episodes from our website, The Citadel Cafe, or subscribe via iTunes to keep up to date. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and Facebook by name. Mr. Ryan Murphy, you are one half of the Gamers In podcast, which normally records Friday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Amove TV. Do you guys have a show this week? You do not.
No show Friday because
it's a holiday, right?
It is a holiday. Yeah. All Fridays are good in my mind, but this Friday is gooder, I guess. I shouldn't joke about that, but no, we are probably looking at a recording on Saturday evening.
Oh, cool.
Trying to slot in recordings around family gatherings and whatnot, but I don't know what we're talking about. Maybe we'll get around to talking about the Amazon Kindle Fire TV, put it in your HDMI slot, whatever it is, I don't know. We've been talking about games every week, and before you know it, it's an hour's passed, and we might be talking about The Wolf Among Us Part 3.
Interesting.
So look forward to that. Saturday night. Stay tuned to Twitter to get an approximate time, but it's usually up on the feeds a day after, so you'll definitely be able to listen on Easter Monday.
Awesome. And that's gamersinpodcast.com or amove.tv/TGI for more details on the show.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned at the top of the episode tonight, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Please also check out my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/joelduggan. I'm adopting the value-for-value model for my comic Starcrossed. If you enjoy the comic, please consider becoming a patron. It makes a world of difference for me, and I am encroaching a $50 per month mark. And I just wanted to let everybody know that's listening now that I will be using that $50 to keep up my Adobe subscription to all of the creative software that I use to make the comic.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, so it goes directly back into, you know, making the comic possible, which is awesome. So thank you to all of the patrons on Patreon.com for me. That's been a real pleasure to experience that many people kind of coming out and helping out. So if you like Starcross, then stop on by Patreon and let me know. Where can people find you online, Ryan?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at rmurphy, and of course visit my website ryanmurphy.ca, where you'll find all the cool little podcasts that I do, including the ones we mentioned at the top of the show, as well as Sleeping with the Elephant. And so I'm marrying a podcaster. We have not pod faded. We haven't recorded in over a month, but that's because we've been so darn busy. And I realize, why did we get a puppy?
I was about to say, it's like now you can just either start a podcast about a puppy, or you can say, so I'm marrying a podcaster and a puppy.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's just it. Like, who's gonna keep the dog busy while we try to podcast? We can hardly even do that now. I kid. But hopefully, your listeners aren't upset by cute puppy noises.
Yeah, I think they'll survive. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
When I podcast, she hears my voice and she'll like go to the door and stick her paws underneath and start whining.
Oh no.
Yeah.
She has a favorite already, huh?
Well, that's what I said, but then I just get punched in the arm.
Nice. I would say I'd lord that over Ashley every chance you get.
I do.
Oh,
my arm's getting sore.